It's another, that's another joke. If most only musicians will get that, I think.
What a great start to the podcast. Hello, everybody. Route 616, your home for all fiends Marvel main continuity, episode 74, and we are all here.
Yeah,
Dan has
barely.
been showing us how hairy his palms are.
Woo! It's just cold. Cruel, cruel
But
people
less
I work
cold
with.
than Lucille.
Or Mabel. Yeah. You
I
just
wish
don't
I.
get it, do you?
No, I don't
Pop
know.
culture is completely lost on you, Ryan.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, let me look up the cast of a Rob Zombie movie and use those. Maybe they'll
Oh,
work
yeah.
better.
Yeah, it's the only. Well, if we can find the cast of Monster House, we might be able to.
That seems kind of
Unlikely.
icky given the context. It is a children's movie.
Yeah, but he knows that movie.
He does.
I mean, I haven't watched it in a long time. I don't even remember the characters' names.
And what was the main plot of Hannah Montana? She's a normal girl who puts on a wig and becomes a superstar or something.
Yeah.
Which one is Hannah Montana, the
The
star
best
or
of
the normal girl?
the star.
Okay. Was she named as a normal girl though? Like,
Miley Cyrus is just Miley. Well, it's Miley
oh,
Stewart or whatever.
Miley playing Miley. Okay.
Yeah, it's Miley Stewart. They changed the last name, but that's something like that. I don't
Miley
know.
They
Cyprus
do that
or
a lot with shows where it's not really an actor playing the lead so that they don't get confused about the name.
yeah. Just wondering,
Best,
Ryan.
it's the best of both worlds.
Oh, okay. Have you ever seen Casey? Yeah, I'm trying to remember Disney shows that exist. Casey Undercover, isn't that Disney?
I didn't like that one.
Why not?
That might have been a Teletoon one, I don't remember.
I thought it was Disney because it had
Might have
Zendaya
been.
or Zendaya. I can't remember.
It probably was done. That was past my time, I think,
I know,
anyway.
what was it, Step It Up or whatever it was called?
Shake it up.
Shake It Up. That was
Shake it up.
Zendaya and Bella Thorne. And then Zendaya went off and did Casey Undercover. And now she's doing Dune. Which you've seen, of course, right? The first one, yes?
No.
Oh, God. Really?
Yeah, no, I
Like,
haven't
seriously.
watched Dune.
Bill, you take over while I sit here and wallow in disappointment.
I mean, not seeing Dune isn't the worst defense out there.
Not liking Big Trouble in Little China is the worst offense out there. Look, me, let's not beat around the bush here. Right? Oh, I'd much prefer watching a Rob Zombie movie than watching Big Trouble in Little China. I know. It for all you people out there banging your heads on your computer screens right now, we feel your pain.
Next thing you know, we're going to find out Ryan didn't like the Goonies.
No,
How
I
do you
like the
not like the
Goonies.
friggin' Goonies?
Goonies rules.
I mean, that is literally. There are classic films that are not just classic film, but cult films as well as great movies. And The Goonies is one of them. I mean, you talk about The Exorcist, Gone with the Wind. The Goonies is on that list somewhere in the top 100 movies. It's got to be. It's The Goonies.
It is like childhood just in a movie.
Encapsulated. Yeah, absolutely encapsulated. Everything you ever wanted to have happen to you, all right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that right, Ryan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, having said that about a movie that I absolutely adore, they have not tried to remake The Goonies. Fingers crossed they never do.
That's a movie that shouldn't be touched.
Yeah.
It aged, like, elements of it aged so poorly that
Granted. Granted.
it gets the pass for being made in the 80s. But if they tried to remake it now, they'd ch have to change it to such an extent that it wouldn't be the Goonies anymore.
Yeah, true.
Either that or get it made by some right-wing content farm that doesn't really understand the movie and just likes it because it has some stuff that's offensive nowadays, and they just amp it up 5,000% and ruin the movie as well.
Yeah. You're right. You're very right. But I ever since I heard they were remaking The Highlander, I've been very annoyed at Hollywood. So it's another movie that doesn't need to be remade.
No, it doesn't.
It's a remake that not one fucking person on the entire planet asked for.
Most remakes don't need to happen.
No, they don't. But there are people out there who want them. Nobody wants a remake of Highlander. It's perfect as it is.
I love Highlander.
Right. You don't remake a movie like that. You just don't.
There can only be one.
That's right. Exactly. And I just, oh. And I mean, I like Henry Cavill. I think he's a great actor. He seems like a really nice person. But he's Superman. He's not Connor McLeod.
No.
And the
kicker is.
Whoa, pause. What was that, Ryan?
I said he tried to be.
Tried to be what?
Superman.
Oh, the pain.
Ryan's getting feisty now.
Yeah, Ryan about to get fucking spanked.
Yeah, I like Henry Cavill, but I still watch Man of Steel.
Let me put it this way. He's a better Superman than he is Geralt of Rivia.
Well, I haven't watched that shit either.
He was a decent Geralt, so that's a fair assessment.
He was decent, but
yeah,
he wasn't fantastic. Yeah. But then that show wasn't fantastic overall. So.
Yeah, to be fair. But
going back to the point I was going to make on Highlander, it's fucking Highlander. They could just make a new one.
Yeah.
They don't need to remake one of the ones that already exist. They could just do another Highlander movie with a different McLeod.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, unless they pull in James Cameron to do it, there's no point. Because James Cameron is the one who did the sequel to Alien. You know, another perfect movie. And he did a good job of a sequel. You know, he could probably do a decent sequel of Highlander. Maybe. I don't know where they're going to go.
I think there was a couple of sequels to Highlander already.
There were, and they were horrifyingly bad.
They were, but they set the precedent for doing another sequel with a different Highlander.
Yeah, well, there was one with Connery and the Quickening or something, and then there was a third one with Mario Van Peebles, and then Adrian Paul did the TV show, so they did a couple of movie offshoots of that. But none of it was very good. They just missed the point of the original film.
Yeah.
Right. It was a movie that didn't give you any room to make a sequel, and yet they came up with a way to do it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't pretty.
No, it wasn't. I mean, there doesn't need to be more, but if they're going to do it, I would rather they did a new sequel than a remake. I'd rather they let that IP lie, but I understand them not wanting to leave money on the table.
Yeah. Yeah, there's money out there for something like this, unfortunately. It's kind of like Fantastic Four. They will keep on trying to redo Fantastic Four. Right? We all know Roger Corman did the best version, so.
I was going to say Alien because of the announcement of the new Alien movie.
Yeah, you guys are both touching on topics that I've been holding on to.
Uh-huh. Got anything to say about the new Alien movie, Ryan?
Alien Romulus, released in August, was the fully confirmed title.
Okay.
I have nothing about it.
Nothing? I do know Ridley Scott was involved. I don't know in what way, if it was as an advisor, producer, whatever.
I think it's as more of an executive type role or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, as long as he's willing to put his name on it, it has a decent chance of being good.
Yeah. Because
he understands Alien.
He does.
And so if they're completely missing the point, he'd not want his name on it.
Yeah.
And since they seem to never be able to get separated between each other these days, there's also two new Predator movies coming. Apparently,
oh, because
there's
oh,
a
God.
There's a Prey 2, a Prey sequel coming. Apparently,
okay, that's okay.
By the same
that.
Guy.
Although I'm not necessarily thrilled that Prey appears to be becoming its own franchise now.
And there is a second one coming.
Okay.
That is untitled so far, to my understanding, and is set in the near future.
Yeah, like,
so
Prey
that is a completely
good.
Separate property.
Oh, I
Prey
I'm,
was really good, but there
I
doesn't
really
need
it.
To be another Prey. They're yeah. going to ruin it by trying it again.
Kind of like Highlander.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I thought Prey was a great film. I thought, what was her name? Amber
What's
Mid-Thunder.
Her face? You played the lead. I don't remember
yeah,
her name. It was
Amber,
great.
Amber Mid-Thunder.
Yeah.
She was phenomenal.
Prey was
she
a shockingly
was so good,
good film.
In that movie.
Right. Yeah, I had no expectations coming in because it's been a long time since I've seen a good Predator movie.
Yeah. I,
like,
I just.
Predator.
Hey, but no, I think Amber Mid-Thunder should be the next big thing in Hollywood. Get her.
Yeah,
in
I would watch more stuff she did, but there doesn't need to be a Prey 2.
No, get her and Jenna Ortega to do a movie together. Right, they're the current Hollywood it girls, so that'd be cool. Yeah.
On the subject of Hollywood making stuff that didn't need to be made. Have either of you two seen the previews for that new horror movie with the teddy bear?
New
it's called,
movie.
Like, Imaginary or something?
No, I have not seen previews. I have to look that up, then.
It looks... I mean, the ads look really good.
Yeah.
Because previews almost always look really good for
yeah.
major studio releases.
Except the entire movie's in the preview.
Yeah, and I have a sinking feeling that this one's going to be absolutely terrible because it's like an imaginary friend possessed teddy bear type thing.
Okay.
And like the possessed doll works in Chucky because the Chucky doll is creepy as fuck.
So it's basically Ted 3.
Yeah, it's basically Ted becomes a murderer. Oh, and then there's like random demonic ghosts in there just for them to generate some actual scares. Because, let's face it, Ted is not scary.
No, no, but after the success... Well, there was a lot of people hating on Megan before it got released. Because they said it was basically going to be Child's Play. And it wasn't.
No, it Megan was great.
It was a completely different thing. But the success of Megan is probably what's prompting a lot of this.
Yeah, the problem is that it's a fucking teddy bear.
Yeah,
they could
should know
go,
their fucking place, fucking teddy bears. Yeah,
they could go the full psychological bed. Horror movie side of things, where they make something innocent scary through
like me.
Good acting and good scripting.
Yeah, it is called Imaginary.
But they don't look like they went that. They've gone the jump scare route.
Well, I mean, with Five Nights at Freddy's getting a sequel, I can see where this is.
There's no way that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
They had locked in like three movies, I think.
Five Nights at Freddy's is such a huge franchise that no matter what happened with that movie, they were getting a sequel.
They signed up Matthew Lillard to like a three-movie contract or something.
Yep, they did.
Here's the premise for Imaginary. When Jessica returns to her childhood home with her family, she finds her old stuffed bear, Chauncey, and sees that her youngest stepdaughter, Alice, has grown attached to it. After Alice's behavior becomes concerning and the games that she and Chauncey play turn increasingly sinister, Jessica starts realizing that Chauncey is much more than the stuffed bear she believed him to be for all those years. Oh, it's a Blumhouse.
Yeah, it's literally an evil teddy bear movie.
Yeah, okay.
It's a Blumhouse movie.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the first
time. Blumhouse and Lionsgate.
Yep, Blumhouse and Lionsgate, so it should be a classic.
Lionsgate can do some good stuff.
Oh,
like
they
did Saw, and the original Saw was fantastic.
Speaking of, Saw 11's coming out this year, too.
Of course, supposedly. Because that horse may have been beaten for a while since it died, but it hasn't been shoved into a saw trap.
Yeah, it's death throes, its body twitched, and they assumed it was still alive, so.
I have the wiki page of all the horror movies coming out this year, and it's like a whole... This is a whole interesting topic in itself right here.
How many of them are going to be good? I'm going to say two.
How many of them are continuations of franchises?
A lot of them.
I'm going to say all but two, and the two that aren't... Well, okay, one of those is going to be imaginary, so...
Yeah.
One of the continuations of a franchise will be good.
Should we do a quick run through for fun?
Yeah, do it. What do we got?
We've got Abigail, which I don't know
what that is.
Don't know what it is.
Sounds familiar, but okay.
Apparently about a group of kidnappers who capture a girl named Abigail or something.
Okay, that sounds terrible.
Abigail's a vampire child, apparently.
Oh, they're trying to...
Oh, wait, that actually might be interesting.
Yeah, she's a vampire child. It's monster horror, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Could be good. I thought it was going to be like a grindhouse exploitation flick at first.
Yeah, well, maybe it's like Becky, because that was just the best little underground, you know, or sort of vengeance movie I've seen in a long time.
Next up is Alien Romulus, which we've already touched on. Yeah. So we'll move on to Asriel, which Deanne will be interested in because it's got Samara Weaving in it. It's an action horror.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
I like action horrors, but I don't really consider them horror.
Yeah,
that usually just means it's an action movie with monster, like traditional monsters in it.
Yeah, I've got Samara Weaving is usually, she's becoming a scream queen, so.
The next A Quiet Place movie is coming out called Day One, which I knew was coming.
Yeah.
I am behind on those movies. I have to watch the third one or whatever.
But that is the third one coming out.
Is this the third one?
Yeah.
Then maybe I am caught up.
The first Quiet Place was good.
I thought there was one I missed, but maybe not.
They didn't need to do a sequel.
Next, we've got one of the ones I'm most interested to see how it goes.
Monster House 2, The Nauseating?
No, Bambi the Reckoning.
Oh, fucking.
Because Bambi's in public domain now, too.
God. It's the poo, blood, and honey guy.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yep. It's
those guys are just going to make a dog shit horror movie for every property that hits.
It's not
domain.
The last one on this list. So just hold.
No,
on.
I know because they're doing a Mickey Mouse one too.
Yes, I heard about that.
That one's not even on here. I don't think. Oh. That's probably going to be next year. Beetlejuice.
Yes, I heard about
it,
that.
It might actually already be out because they tried to tie the release of those horror movies to stuff going into public domain. Steamboat Willie went into public domain about a month ago.
Yeah, at the start of the year. Bunker Heights, I don't know. This is a horror comedy, apparently, so it's probably going to be bad, because I don't see any names that are redeeming. Violent J, yep, this is going to be bad.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be horrible.
Okay, keep going.
Violent J is one of the insane clown posse for Dan.
Cuckoo, which is from a German movie, apparently.
Cuckoo? Okay.
Pure horror.
That could be good. Foreign horror movies tend to avoid a lot of the traps of Hollywood horror movies.
Yes, they do.
Next one is Cult Killer, a horror thriller. Antonio Banderas is the main name I recognize there.
That has potential.
That doesn't mean anything. I've seen some of his recent films. They were crap.
Okay. There's a demon. I haven't seen anything he's done since the 90s.
There's a Demon Slayer movie coming. Probably
the anime nerds will be excited for that one.
Yeah,
we've got Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which for some reason
I've seen the trailers.
Trailers for that. That looks awful.
Oh, look, Paul Rudd's in here. So supernatural fantasy comedy.
It looks like they're trying to do a more serious horror movie with the Ghostbusters.
Mm, yeah,
we've got Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire.
Yeah. Yeah, meh. That'll be fun. It won't be as good as Minus One by any
stretch. I haven't loved the Godzilla Kong movies.
Well, the problem is with the Hollywood Godzilla, they started out strong, but they've just been sort of stumbling along ever since, putting out, you know, high-end special effects. So visually, it's great.
Yeah.
But the story and the characters are all incredibly unlikable. The story is all over the place. It really doesn't go anywhere sensible. You know, it's just getting more and more weird.
Godzilla versus Kong also has to kind of crap all over the source material to work.
Yes.
Because
yeah,
Kong was big for a monkey.
Yeah.
Godzilla would still step on him and squash him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they have to blow Kong up to ludicrous proportions to make him compete with Godzilla.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got a horror mystery from Norway called Hanlon the Undead.
Ooh, that could be good. I've seen some really good stuff come out of Norway.
Have either of you seen Sisu?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Next up is,
go watch it, Ryan. Go watch
it. Oh, the names on this one make me think this is going to be awful. I saw the TV Glow, which has, we've got Justice Smith, we've got Fred Durst. So, yeah. Next up is Imaginary, which we already spoke on. Then we have Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh, God.
A please horror no. comedy, by the way, so...
Please no.
That actually could be better than if it was a straight-up horror.
Then we've got Lawn Legs. A Nicolas Cage movie. Okay. Horror thriller. New FBI agent assigned to unsolved cases of serial killer. It sounds pretty basic right there. Night Swim. Supernatural horror.
I've seen a bunch of previews for that, and I can't figure out what the fuck it's about.
It's literally about a haunted swimming pool. I've actually seen it.
They've got the whole. Really, it came out already.
It's so bad. Yeah. Yeah, I've already seen it. It's not that good.
Nosferatu?
That could be.
Yeah, I'm Bill dying Skarsgård, to see what they. It? Yeah, I'm dying to see Willem what they Dafoe. Decide to do with it.
Gothic it could be horror.
Brilliant, or it could be horror.
It depends on if the people who make it understand Nosferatu. Or just know the name.
It's got a fucking awesome cast.
Doesn't matter.
The fact that they've got Bill Skarsgård and Willem Dafoe in it makes me think that it's probably going to be good.
Well, Nicholas Holt is here too. Lily Rose Depp. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
They're good, okay, you're but not I don't filling trust me with inspiration them the here, same buddy. Way I do like Bill Skarsgård to not put his name on something that's shit.
Yeah, but I mean, the original, the 22 version... Plus the remake they did in the 70s. It was the 70s. 70s or 80s, the remake they did.
You're the one that I'd remember.
The one with Isabella Johnny.
All those centuries start blurring together after a while.
They really do. They really do. But either way...
I'm realizing something here.
Yes.
Nosferatu was a bald old man with kind of a hooked nose. And I've never seen Dan eating garlic.
Oh my. I'm just gonna move on. We're at the S's now.
What'd you talk about, Willis?
That I already mentioned.
Okay, Brian, have you seen the original Nosferatu?
No.
1922. Of course not. It's a 22 or 1919. It's a silent film. It's brilliant. Absolutely fucking brilliant. And genuinely scary.
Yeah, it's shocking how scary it is to a modern audience.
It is a genuinely scary movie. Then the remake was really, really well done. So, there you go.
Okay.
So, this is going to be nothing but a disappointment.
One called Shelby Oaks up next. No clue what that's about. We've got... this must be some kind of a gay horror movie because it's called Skeletons in the Closet. No. Then we've got Smile 2, the sequel that will probably disappoint
another
a lot of people.
Another sequel that doesn't need to exist.
Yeah, that nobody wanted.
Leave fucking Smile alone, because the first one was brilliant.
It really was good. It really was.
And that again, Smile demon bothers me.
I haven't watched it still. Yeah, I keep meaning to.
Of course.
That's okay. If I ever see him, I'll bite him on the neck.
We've got Speak No Evil up next. Away. Which has James McAvoy, however McAvoy? You say his name. McAvoy. Thank you. Stream. I don't know. Some kind of it's a streaming slasher. I think I have heard of this one.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that. It's trying to cash in onto that pandemic one they did with the ghost haunting the group chat.
Yes, yes. Unfriended?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's Unfriended.
It really wasn't that bad. Right? I didn't mind.
It was very good and gets extra points for the creativity of how they did it.
Yeah,
because most of those people did their own effects because yeah. they really were locked in their houses during the pandemic.
Yeah, for what it was really well done.
I love those movies. There's two of them. We've got Tarot, Supernatural Horror.
Oh, I heard about this one. This one should be pretty fun.
Yeah. They've been talking about that one for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Terrifier is getting its third movie, with, I'm sure, a huge budget now.
I hope it pulls back in line to Terrifier 1, less Terrifier 2.
I still haven't watched Terrifier 2, but...
It's got some pretty gnarly stuff in it, but it's not a very good story.
Yeah, well, Terrifier 1 was a terrible film, but it was a great idea. And it was very effective.
It was a terrible film with a great character. Because it was so limited,
and Art the Clown was so enigmatic. They started trying to give him lore in Terrifier 2, and that ruined it.
Yeah, Terrifier 2 got weird, as opposed to scary.
Yeah.
Like, it was so excessive. It had
some gnarly stuff that was hard to watch, but it wasn't really scary.
Yeah, it was really over the top, I think.
Next up,
go ahead.
Really over the top, yeah. I've heard about some of the kills and stuff in that one. Next up is The Crow, which is probably controversial, because I'm sure it's a remake.
It does not need to exist.
It has to be a remake.
100% does not need to exist.
Yeah.
Kinda the like Crow Brandon is Lee. One of my all-time favorite movies. They don't need to remake it or do another sequel to it.
At least because it's another one that the
sequels have been steadily ruining after a classic first movie.
At least Bill Skarsgård, isn't it?
What, again? Oh, he's going to be the Crow?
Probably, I hope he's not the Crow. He doesn't really strike me as a Crow type guy.
No.
You need the skinny arch type for the Crow.
He is the Crow.
He is skinny. And Brandon Lee and Stuart Townsend, I think, were the two that played the Crow so far.
No, there was another guy.
A third guy?
Yeah, there was a third Crow movie that was even worse than the second one.
Wow. I don't recall ever seeing it, so it doesn't matter.
I used to own it. It is truly horrible.
And then you sold it to the comic shop.
Yes.
we've got a horror flick. We've got
a secondhand movie. It's worth a fortune, Jim. Okay.
We have a horror thriller from Thailand next. That could be good. Called The Cursed Land.
That could be good. They do some good stuff.
We've got the first Omen.
Eric Mabius was the third Crow.
Eric Mabius. I don't know that name.
There's probably a reason for that. I'm looking to see if he's in anything that you'd recognize. Oh, he was in Cruel Intentions.
Oh.
He was in the first Resident Evil.
Oh, really?
He's Matt Addison in the Resident Evil series. That's probably what you'd know him from.
Matt Addison?
He was in the first. He was in Resident Evil and Apocalypse, but that was a replay.
Okay, hold on. Resident Evil 1.
Oh, he's the guy who gets turned into Nemesis.
Guy gets turned into Nemesis.
And then he was on like a shitload of TV shows.
I cannot place his face. But, wait a minute. He was kind of a goofy looking guy, wasn't he?
He looks pretty normal in this picture of him.
Yeah, he just doesn't strike me as the type that could play the Crow.
Oh, I told you it was horrendous. It's not a good portrayal of the Crow.
Yeah.
They're not trying to pass him off as Draven either. He's like Alex Corvus or something.
Eric Mabius. Yeah, Matt. Yeah, okay. Whatever you say.
We've got the first Omen, which I'm sure is a prequel film for the Omen series that I've never watched. I don't know. We've got a psychological horror thriller starring Pete Davidson called The Home.
Please no. Please no.
Oh, wait. I think I actually saw a preview for that, and it looks shockingly good for something starring Pete Davidson.
I'm sure you'll be disappointed.
I'm sure I will, but it looks better than I expected.
Okay. We've got a supernatural horror with Dakota Fanning called The Watchers. This sounds like a remake.
Sounds like a remake. Because isn't there a Watchers film?
It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
No, it's probably not a remake then. It's a common enough word that it could be repurposed.
Yeah, well, it's got M. Night Shyamalan ding dang there, so it'll be terrible.
He's been the cause
of most film disappointment that I've ever had. So
He's still awful. He's done like two good movies ever.
He's like a really, really, really unworthy Roger Corman.
But he's been pulling back some of his worst excesses.
We've got four more left. He hasn't been
The Happening bad lately.
Or Devil, or Lady in the Water, or The Village, or, you know, Avatar.
Okay, there's no being Avatar bad, and I stand by the fact that the first two-thirds of The Village are actually good.
You're not supposed to be doing this podcast drunk, Bill. I'm sorry. I'm really disappointed in you. Shall we get to the comics? The Village is good
until the twist.
Whatever you want to call it. We should probably get to the comics while we're ahead.
There's four more. Let's just push through. Well, I would if you guys
were this.
There's one I'm excited for, The Strangers Chapter 1, because I like those movies. It's got Madeline Pesch, who I like, Gabriel Basso. Okay. So.
Directed by Rob Zombie, directed to Disney Channel.
No, calm down. Then we've got Don't Pop Too Loud, Bill, but we've got Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I told you it wasn't done on this list.
That movie was... I bet no one's going to go to it because the novelty's out after the first one. The only reason anyone went to the first one was the novelty.
Witchboard, whatever this is, supernatural horror. Cool.
Witchboard?
Dan, you missed that they're doing a Winnie the Pooh 2.
Yes! My dreams have been answered. Finally something to compete with Rob Zombie's Halloween.
We've got the last one on the list is called Your Monster, a romantic horror comedy, which has Melissa Barrera, so at least she has something after Scream.
And those romantic horror comedies have been landing more than they've been missing.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's an untapped
genre, which sounds like it should absolutely not work. It's fairly consistently working.
It's becoming an untapped market that's getting tapped into slowly.
Although the more it gets tapped into, the more it's not going to work in the future because they're working because the only people who try it are the people that actually have a story they care about.
And the one that...
They'll blame Simon Pegg and Nick Frost for most of that anyway, so...
The one last piece of pop culture stuff I will mention before we go to the comics, which I was going to mention with the Alien Finn earlier. You mentioned Fantastic Four and how they're doing another one. Well, one of the heads of that new MCU movie supposedly revealed that Pedro Pascal is going to be Reed Richards. So,
really?
That's actually pretty cool. I like Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, yeah. Reed is actually going to be a good character.
Well, he's a good actor, so I can't see him being in this.
Hopefully he can properly capture the dickishness of Reed.
Plus, he'll pull the ladies in because he's got the saddie material.
Yeah, because they tried to make Reed too sympathetic in a lot of stories. And the thing is, Reed is an asshole.
Kind of like Hank.
Eventually, Marvel even realizes it and goes beyond Stan's bad writing to, like, Reed actually being a borderline supervillain.
Oh, the Ultimate Universe goes all in on that fact.
Oh, I know. Mm. That's what I mean. That's why I say borderline, because... The main universe, he never goes full villain, but they bring the Maker in and keep the origin the same. And it's like, everyone knows Reed is kind of a dick.
Yeah. But anyways, let's not spend too much time on Reed Richards because we're going to anyway, because it's Fantastic Four time in our comics. Yes,
and keeping one last thing, I have made it my mission in life to track down a copy of Roger Corman's Fantastic Four. Since I saw the documentary, I want to see this movie. God, I want to see this movie so bad. Jonathan Hyde White plays Dr. Doom.
I'm like 90% sure I have seen that movie.
Yeah? Well, I'm hoping it shows up somewhere. I'm desperately trying to find it, so we'll see what happens.
We all have different goals in life. But anyways, Fantastic Four number 45 will start us off today.
Oh, yeah,
I have totally seen this movie.
Oh, there you go. Well, I got to find a copy.
Titled Among Us Hyde, the Inhumans. Stanley
that
and
should
Jack
be the title for our podcast.
But some we weeks you're not the, on.
We don't want that's the, right. We don't want the stink of the Inhumans on us.
I'm out feeding when you're doing these.
Stanley and Jack Kirby. Joe Sano is on inks.
We're mutants all the way on this podcast.
Yeah. Alrighty, Simics on Letters. This is an October 1965 release date, 20 page toy. Dan will take this one away.
Okay, can we address something we never talk about? Jack Kirby's inability to draw a woman's hair.
Yeah, we've never talked about that on this podcast.
I was just thinking about that hair on that cover because it's truly horrible.
He never could. It's terrible. My God. Oh.
I mean, I'd settle for him being able to draw a second woman's face before he masters the hair.
We touched about how bad, I don't remember if Dan was here for this, but we touched about on how bad it is because in the annual where Reed and Sue get married, there's one page where it is Sue herself, like in her wedding dress or whatever, getting ready to get dressed up or whatever.
Jesus
and they go
Christ.
To the next page and it's Alicia and you wouldn't know. If you didn't have the context clues.
I've seen multiple cases where Alicia and Sue are in the same scene.
Apart.
And they miscolor one of them, and you can't tell them apart.
Yeah. Okay, we got to get into this, because this summary is huge.
Yeah, I know. That's
it's crazy.
That's why Ryan stuck you with it.
Oh, you bastard. Yeah, okay. Look,
we're going to pick up our pace a little.
Yeah, so we're going to do this quick. Among Us Hyde, the Inhumans. Mr. Fantastic grabs a hold of the Thing and pulls him from the wreckage. The Human Torch, in turn, grabs both of them and carries them to higher ground. Reed sends Johnny off to find the Dragon Man and the Invisible Girl. Johnny quickly tracks them down, uses a supernova burst, and temporarily blinds the Dragon Man. Sue is able to wrest free of his grasp. Elsewhere, the Sandman and the Trapster attempt to break out of their prison cell. Sandman tries to punch his way through the glass window, but as soon as he does, a secondary pane of glass slides over top of it. The Trapster wonders if Medusa will attempt to rescue them. I wonder, too. Do you guys wonder? I wonder. The Invisible Girl manages to tame Dragon Man and discovers that the creature behaves as if he were actually a small child. Sue and Johnny bring the Dragon Man back to the Baxter Building for a bottle and an afternoon nap. And Johnny leaves and tries to call Dory Evans for a date. Dory has other plans and Johnny gets miffed. Oh, shot down.
I think this is where Dory gets taken out of the picture.
This is the last time Dory will ever be mentioned.
Oh.
I think she gets mentioned like one more time as a past tense thing.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay. Johnny's
off to be creepy about a new woman now.
Oh, okay. He goes for a walk down the streets of Midtown Manhattan, and he finds a skittish red-haired woman sitting in the back of an alleyway. Johnny is completely mystified by her and tries to approach. The woman shoos him away, and suddenly a strong gust of wind blows through the air, separating them. When Johnny recovers his senses, the girl is gone. Confused, he returns to the Baxter Building. I got hit by a gust of wind. I'm really confused. Johnny is frustrated and gets into an argument with Sue and Ben. Who wrote this? Nobody cares. Angrily, he snaps back and leaves. Jesus. Seriously. He snaps back and leaves the building to search for the mysterious redhead. He finds her in another alleyway and discovers her name is Crystal. Crystal sees Johnny demonstrate his powers and deduces they are similar to one another. She decides to take Johnny back to her place. Crystal's pet is an oversized bulldog named Lockjaw.
Love Lockjaw.
Lockjaw has forked antennae on his brow, which generates a charge of energy. The energy opens up a portal to Crystal's homeland, and the three enter the rift. At the Baxter building, the Dragon Man begins to lose control again. Apparently he needs somebody to change his diety. Reed and Ben attempt to contain him, while Sue renders him inert with a tranquilizer gun. That's not very sporting. Afterwards, Ben stalks off to reflect upon what it is like to live as a monster. Wow, tone shift, people? Oh. Crystal, meanwhile, introduces Johnny to her people, the Inhumans. First, he meets Karnak, who demonstrates his martial prowess.
My boy!
By judo flipping Johnny over his shoulder. Okay, sure. He then encounters Black Bolt, Pooh, Gorgon, and Triton. The most surprising member of the Inhumans, however, is Crystal's sister, Medusa, a woman who Johnny remembers as a member of the Frightful Four. Karnak claims that Johnny tricked Crystal into believing that he was an Inhuman like she, and a fight breaks out. Despite his powers, Johnny cannot defeat all his adversaries. So he burns a hole through the ceiling and flies off. Creates the four signal in the air with his flame to alert the rest of the Fantastic Four. Reed sees the signal and wow, how high in the air did he do this? They do understand the Earth is curved, right? You know, like,
it's Stan, so I'm not entirely sure.
This is the 60s and it's Stan Lee, so probably not, to be honest.
Wow. Reed sees the signal and the three board their new air jet cycle. They track Johnny down and encounter Gorgon, Karnak, and Medusa. The superpower combatants begin to fight when suddenly Black Bolt, leader of the Inhumans, arrives on the scene. And that's the end of that god-awful summary. I've seen soap operas that weren't that friggin' convoluted.
I crumble.
It reads easier than it summarizes, honestly.
Yeah, it does. It's way more
this
fun.
This comic
than
actually flows
mission.
Pretty well.
Number 46 summary is just as bad. I swear to God, Ryan, I'm going to pull a Liam Neeson 40, on you. I will find you. I will fuck you up.
Bad too. For some reason,
don't worry,
these ones
he's
are worse
not brave enough to try
ones.
To kidnap Moira.
He does. He's on his own.
Now he's knowing you, buddy. You'd have to go Liam Neeson to haul his mangled carcass out of her grasp.
Yeah. You go ahead. You try and kidnap her. So, see what happens to you. You get what you deserve. So guys, have at it. Let me guess. A three?
No, hold on to your britches. I don't have any threes. I lied. I have one three this week. And it's not this one. Has this one got a four?
This one got a four from me, too. It's got Dragon Man. Of course I'm going to like it.
You are sick motherfuckers. You know that?
Dragon Man is awesome.
You sit here on a podcast with you two wieners while you give a Fantastic Four title a four. It's just embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. This is the iconic stretch of Fantastic. This is the start of the iconic stretch of the Fantastic Four.
Wow, iconic. Really?
Yeah, it's a classic run until Kirby has enough and says, fuck you, Stan.
Oh my god, kill me now. Oh god, kill me now. I'm going to move on to the next one before you guys get into this.
We would kill you, but I feel like based on that one, the summary for 46 might do it for us.
Those Who Would Destroy Us, this one's titled. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby still destroying Dan's morale. Joe Sinnoh's still here inking. Artie Simic is still lettering. November 1965 release date, 20-page story. And Dan, try not to die reading this one.
This is really going to hurt. Okay, synopsis for Those Who Would Destroy Us. Gotta take a deep breath on this.
I gave the indies two because I figured it'd be funny.
You're a dick, you know that? The Thing begins fighting with Black Bolt. He is amazed at the Inhuman leader's speed and strength. Reed discovers that Black Bolt acquires his powers by absorbing electrons from the air into the antennae atop his brow. The Thing decides that all he needs to do is disable Black Bolt's nutty tuning fork, and the fight will be over. Meanwhile, Triton attacks the Imatorch and manages to douse Johnny's flames. What'd he do, pee on him? Triton states that the Inhumans have managed to avoid the attention of the Seeker for many years, but this impromptu fight may expose them all. Reed wraps his arms around him until he realizes that Triton's tunic is actually a sealed moisture bag. The bag rips open, the water spills out. With only seconds left, Triton makes a mad dash for the pier and dives into the water. Gorgon and Karnak take the opportunity to mount an attack against Reed and Sue. Meanwhile, the Inhuman known as the Seeker arrives with his entourage at the Baxter building. They have captured Triton and are in the process of tracking down the remaining Inhumans. The Seeker enters a laboratory where he finds the sedated Dragon Man. Mistakenly believing the Dragon Man to be an Inhuman, he prepares to bring him back to his hidden lair. In the city, the Thing continues his fight against Black Bolt. Black Bolt proves too fast for the Thing's punches, but Ben manages to land an occasional blow, so he's not too fast for the Thing's punches. Why would they say he is if he's still managing to land blows?
Casually lion-like.
Who wrote this, monkey?
Possibly it is a wiki.
Yeah, you can tell. Karnak encourages his leader to use his strongest attack against Ben, a powerful punch that nearly cripples the Thing. It rocked him, did it? I make joke. The tactic proves too much for Black Bolt, however, and he nearly exhausts all his energy. Crystal informs Gorgon and the others that Triton has disappeared and may have been captured. They agree that a strategic withdrawal would be in their best interest, and Lockjaw teleports all the Inhumans to safety. Johnny flies after them, hoping to find a trace of Crystal. Sue is startled to see how enamored her brothers become with the Inhuman. The Fantastic Four return to the Baxter building, only to find a hole in the laboratory wall. The Dragon Man is gone, and Reed uses a special probe to trace the energy signature of the people who made off with the creature. Wow, that's convenient. They follow the trail to the Seeker's hideout in the city and go inside, where they find the Seeker in his Seeker in the Seeker's hideout, and they capture Dragon Man.
There's a Seeker in space.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you done?
This is the worst comic of the day, by the way, in my opinion.
Oh, God. The Seeker has since discovered that Dragon Man is merely an artificial life form and not an Inhuman at all, so he offers to return him to the FF. Reed asks him about the Inhumans, and the Seeker explains that the Inhumans are a race of highly evolved humanoids who perfected the arts of genetic engineering. Through their advanced science, they can bestow superpowers onto any individual they see fit. While the Seeker continues to speak, in another room, the Dragon Man awakens. Flying into a rage, he bursts free of his shackles and begins to run amok through the laboratory. The Seeker's guards open fire on him, but their weapons prove useless. During the struggle, the Dragon Man inadvertently knocks over the water tank containing Triton's captured form. Triton spills out of the tank, but without water to revitalize him, he will soon die. God, one could only hope. Okay, I'm done. Can I go home now?
Don't you want to hear what happens next?
Not even fucking remotely.
If we learn anything today, it's that the Inhumans are the...
I care about as much about this as I do about Super Slam. Or Summer Slam, or whatever the fuck it's called.
Summerfest?
Yeah, that too. Who's that, the latest WWF fighter? I am Summerfest.
Like I said already.
Featuring Jeff Harvey?
This one is...
Steve Harvey's younger brother?
This one is the weakest issue of the day, in my opinion. Saying that, it's not a bad issue. It still gets a 3.
So, it's only got a 3?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you're picking up.
I'm glad you're picking up here, Dan.
It's terrible. Let's give it a 3.
I said it's the weakest of the day.
You guys really got to figure out your scoring system at some point in your lives.
We only have 5 choices.
See, this is what happened to white guys on a weekend when they can't score. They sit down and they read comic books and score those instead.
If it makes
remember
you feel
to wipe the pages off when you're done.
If it makes you feel better, tell that to Daniel. If it makes you feel better, if it makes you feel better, I'm in the minority because the site is leaning towards a 4
I
for
also
the average.
It a 3.
I bought a comic there and it's all sticky.
So
sorry,
Bill and I are both in the minority.
Pile.
Yeah. Why is my anime all sticky?
The other quick note I would like to mention is Black Bolt's powers are different here than they would become, as it's more focused on his antenna and extra strength and all that bullshit, and his power of his words, his power where he can speak, and it does. That power hasn't been explored yet. I don't know what
the
I'm trying to...
The power of Black Bolt compels you. The power of Black Bolt compels you.
They really don't know what they're doing with Black Bolt yet.
No, they don't. Yeah, he's pretty much a completely different character at this point than he would become.
I mean, the only inhuman... New inhuman, I should specify, because Medusa's been around for a while. They figured her out. But the only new inhuman they actually seem to have a grip on is Triton. Because Crystal's elemental powers are just whatever the fuck they need at the moment. Gorgon's basically generic strong guy. Karnak, they talk a lot about his powers, but they never actually do anything. Huh. And if there are other Inhumans, I've forgotten them because they're all pretty generic at this point.
So Gorgon.
So this is about as good
as
the...
Gorgon.
Oh, did you? I wasn't paying attention. Yeah,
this is almost as entertaining as the Inhumans TV show.
No, overall, the story scored better, so I'd say
this story is much better than the Inhumans TV show.
There you go.
I would like to say Lockjaw is number one Inhuman and also the goodest boy, so.
Oh, Lockjaw is awesome.
He's a good boy.
I don't really count him as an Inhuman because all dogs are Inhuman. But I love Lockjaw.
I just go with what they tell me. But anyways.
Time to go hunt down Bambi and let's get on with this.
There was a fantastic little backup series for a while where Lockjaw and the Thing are jumping through dimensions as like a buddy cop team up.
Never make a movie with an animal.
We've got Fantastic Four 47 up next. This one's titled Beware the Hidden Land. We've got Stan Lee, Jack Kirby still going at it here. Joe Snow still with Kirby doing inks. Artie Simic still on the letters. December 1965 release date, 20-page story, and I will take this one away. Dan is feeling such joy right now.
Yeah, this Reed storyline's stretching a little thin.
The Human Torch and the Thing fly off
maybe
to confront the dragon.
Back.
Fly off to confront the Dragon Man, leaving Reed and Sue in the Seeker's Fortress to look after Triton. Oh, I forgot to mention the main reason that one got knocked down a point was because I don't like the Seeker stuff. Seekers sucks. Anyways, without water to revitalize Triton, he is quickly suffocating. Sue erects a force field around his body to keep him steady, ooh la la, while Reed pumps water from a fire hose into the bubble to replenish him.
I'm pretty sure that would, like, kill him if you actually tried that.
Yeah, it would because it's got
it's incredibly pressurized.
It's pressurized, but it's not salt water. And I'm assuming he needs salt water. Not water with chlorine.
I think he just needs water because he's an amphibian. He breathes through gills.
Yeah, but most sea creatures can't swim in fresh water. So, you know.
I don't think they realize that.
He definitely swims in fresh water in stories, so it's not seawater specifically, it's just water in general. But okay. Still, sticking him in a bag and spraying a fire hose in there is going to do some serious damage to him.
Well, I say they keep him in the bag and let him just...
Keep him as a pet.
Stay there for a while, not let him loose until he's used to, you know, the other animals are used to him. Then they can let him out of the bag and he can swim.
Treat him like a fucking... What's that? What's that type of fish called?
Yeah, fighting fish.
Oh, man. A beta fish. That's what it's called. Yeah. Treat him like a beta fish. Anyways, Outside, the Finn and the Torch tangle with the Dragon Man. The Dragon Man slaps the Finn with his tail, sending him crashing through the window of Alicia Master's studio apartment. Well, not quite, but close enough. Johnny continues to fight and change his heart.
Skylight.
Well, he's kind of cleaning onto the side of the building at first, and then he gets knocked in, but whatever.
He does fall into her apartment.
Really, guys?
Johnny continues to fight and... You just gotta drag this out more for you, sorry, Dan. Johnny continues to fight and changes his heat blast to ultraviolet radiation. Intensifying the heat, he weakens the Dragon Man, and the creature eventually falls down unconscious. Back at the fortress, the secret rangers to collect Triton. Reed has succeeded in saving Triton's life, but he is reluctant to interfere with inhuman law. Sue pressures him to do something, but Reed snaps at her. Before the secret takes Triton away, Reed secretly plants a home in the face on the Inhuman. So, Johnny's not the only one stalking. Meanwhile, the royal family of the Inhumans returns to their homeland, the Great Refuge. The reigning king, Maximus, new character alert, learns of their arrival and unleashes the Alpha Primitives to combat them. Maximus is the brother of Black Bolt.
The brother?
Black Bolt flies directly into the primitives, sending them scattering. After a brief battle, Maximus enters the chamber and apologizes for the infantry. He claims that the alpha primitives have escaped on their own. Realizing that he cannot hope to win over Black Bolt's courageousness, Maximus hands the crown of leadership over to his brother. The Fantastic Four take a private jet to the Andes Mountain and locate the Great Refuge. They set down and Reed and Sue bicker some more. Sue decides to change her hairstyle to get Reed to notice her more. I forgot about that part.
Oh yeah, Sue is insufferable in these comics. She's completely forgotten how to be a superhero and is only concerned about Reed treating her like his wife. And not in a sexy way.
They eventually come upon the royal family. Crystal and Johnny are reunited, but Black Bolt stands ready for battle. Speaking for her liege, Medusa declares that non-Inhumans are not welcome in the Great Refuge. Reed says that the Inhumans should not have to live in seclusion and should live alongside the rest of humanity. Meanwhile, Maximus retires to his laboratory. He preps his Atmo gun and declares that he will use it to destroy all of humanity. There we go.
Just reading the comic is destroying most of humanity.
So, no, I was just trying to think of Maximus tends to be referred to as Maximus the Mad, but in this, where he's got the crown, he's Maximus to something else. And I
so he's Mad Maximus?
Pretty much. This one got back to a 4
for me. This was still a 3 for me.
Which
I
is
didn't love it.
More, which
it was
is
pretty
fair.
Generic stuff.
This has the weakest average rating on the site, but I mean, still close to a 4 technically. But
it was painful.
I don't like the secret stuff, but it came back around to make sense with him working for Maximus and Maximus having the crown. I like Maximus, so that helped probably.
Maximus is a good villain. The problem is they haven't fleshed out the Inhumans enough for me to care.
The problem also with the Inhumans and Maximus is that they fall back on him too much, and he tends to be their one interested villain, and they don't actually try to make any other interesting villains.
That is true as well, but at this point, my big issue was just, like, I don't care. I don't know who any of these people are.
Yeah.
They haven't given it time to breathe.
Oh, yeah, like a fine wine. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Let's move on to Fantastic Four number 48.
Please, God, yes. Let's get this over with.
This one settled the coming of the coming of the... I can't even talk. The coming of Galactus. So this is starting the Galactus trilogy. The classic storyline.
Yeah.
Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Joe Snow still here, Artie Simic still here. We've got our Fantastic Four lineup down, folks. This is January 1966 release date, starting the new year off.
Sorry.
That's not who we're talking about. 20-page story.
He doesn't show up until way later in an Ghost Rider comic.
Yeah.
I think it was Ghost Rider that Jesus first showed up in.
I'm just looking at the incredible write-up for this. Oh my
Dracula.
God. Who did these summaries? And why are they allowed to breathe?
Yeah, these ones are. But at least this one has a brief summary. This storyline has a brief summaries and detailed summaries. But, I mean, for our purposes, of course, we're going to go with the detailed summaries. So,
bastard.
Our purposes are torturing Dan.
You sons of bitches.
Maximus fires the Zapmo gun, which he teased at the end of the last issue, of course.
Oh, fuck, I forgot it was called the Zapmo gun.
Well, the vibrations...
I forgot that it was called that.
Well, the vibrations produced by the weapon proves ineffective against Inhumans, it has the potential to wreak havoc against normal human beings. The ground of the Great Refuge trembles from the power of the weapon, and everyone is thrown about. Maximus cackles with glee, much like me, given Dan Long's synopsis, as he envisions the death of millions of helpless humans. For all of his mad genius, however, Maximus' plan fails. Aside from a few massive ground tremors, humanity is perfectly safe. Gorgon and Karnak make a move to apprehend Maximus, but he darts past them and heads towards the Zapmo gun. He reverses the polarity of the weapon, creating a null field of negative energy to slowly encapsulate the Great Refuge. Reed knows that there is nothing they can do to counter the effects of a complete negative zone.
So not the he leaves, and the comic's over.
So this is the first talks of a negative zone. I don't know if this ties into what becomes a negative zone or what, but interesting.
Oh, we're getting very close to the debut of the negative zone.
Yeah.
Oh, we hit the negative zone the second I had to start reading this shit.
Reed, Sue, and Ben race to escape from the city, but Johnny wants to stay behind because he's a lovesick puppy. He doesn't want to leave Crystal. Crystal wants to remain with Johnny as well, but the rest of her family draw her back. Ben scoops Johnny up and manages to get outside of the null field barrier.
You know what's scary? That's still a more healthy relationship than any of the ones featured in the romance order.
Just as it completely seals the Great Refuge up from the rest of the world. Everyone feels Johnny's sorrow, and he is convinced that he will never see Crystal again. The team boards their private charter and returns to the United States. In a way, I almost wish they left Johnny in the Null Field for a bit, but anyway.
I would have appreciated it.
But I guess he's needed soon enough. Meanwhile, in the depths of outer space, a sleek, shining being known as the Silver Surfer. Oh my god! the star of the Rise of the Silver Surfer Fantastic Four movie.
You mean Chris Evans?
The sleek, shining being known as the Silver Surfer streaks through the cosmos atop a metallic surfboard. While soaring through the Andromeda Galaxy, he draws the attention of the Skrulls. The Skrulls know that wherever the Silver Surfer appears, his master Galactus cannot be far behind. Terrified, the Skrulls do everything they can to conceal their world from the Surfer's perceptions.
Taking forever.
There's only 3 paragraphs left. You can survive. In New York, the Fantastic Four arrive home to witness a most startling spectacle. The entire skyline appears as if it had caught fire. The Human Torch flies through the city canyons to get a closer look, but panic in New Yorkers begin to suspect that the Torch may actually be responsible for the strange phenomena, which is actually pretty logical, really, at this point. The FF returns to the Baxter building, and Reed sequesters himself inside of his laboratory to analyze the situation. The flames in the sky dissipate, giving way to an unending field of space debris. Powerful being known as the Watcher appears inside of Reed's laboratory, here to do exactly what he's not supposed to. He explains that he is responsible for the atmospheric disturbances, for he has been attempting to conceal Earth's existence from the attention of the Silver Surfer. He further explains that the Surfer is the advanced scout of Galactus, a powerful cosmic being that consumes an elemental that consumes the elemental energies of entire worlds, leaving them as little more than dried, lifeless husks. The surfer, meanwhile, investigates the debris field and finds Earth hidden beneath it. He flies to the roof of the Baxter building and sends it a cosmic signal for Galactus. The FF races to the top of the building and the thing rams into the surfer, knocking him off the edge. The surfer is no longer a major concern, however. In the sky above the Galactus planet, the Farouin world ship, Tatu, appears in the skies above Manhattan. The giant Galactus exits the ship and declares his intention to consume the entire world. And that's the first of the Galactus trilogy done.
This was a good one. Once they got finished with the Inhumans, the biggest strike against it was that they cliffhung us with the Zatmo gun. Best name since Balzac. And then that whole issue is resolved in like 2 pages and they just head back to New York for a different adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do wrap that up quick. I didn't mind that really, though. Partially probably knowing what was coming. We really are getting the better stuff here fast from the start. I honestly love this one. I gave it a 5.
Fuck it. Gave it a 4.
Of course you gave it a 5.
I gave it a 5. I love this comic. It was a load of fun. I thought it was really good.
And you like Rob Zombie movies. Of course you thought it was good.
We switch places. Usually I'm the one that's like way more positive on comics.
Yeah, we did switch places here. It had to happen.
You've been pretty much consistently liking all of these more than me.
This Fantastic Four one's really good.
I'm not saying it's a bad run. It's just funny that you're like consistently a star ahead of me.
I also like the Fantastic Four more than you, I think, in general.
That is true. I do hate the Fantastic Four in general. So
it's better than Spider-Man, but that's about it.
We had to go there at some point. Pete doesn't even show up in this arc. He does show up in this arc.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I think part of my appreciation is...
I don't know if he'll show up into the summaries, but dead seriously, Peter Parker makes an appearance in this arc.
I think part of my appreciation is the fact that these are so hyped up and that it lives up enough to that hype for me in terms of actually being really good and staying the test of time. Like, they nail a lot of the Silver Surfer Galactus relationship and stuff from the start.
I've been amazed by how close a lot of this stuff is to the modern tellings of it.
Dan looks like somebody that's gone through, like, a war.
Kill me.
We only have 2 more left, so let's move on to Fantastic Four number 49.
Just feed me some garlic and get it over with.
Let's go to the issue that has the best overall average of any of the comics we've covered today, and probably my favorite of the day also.
Fantastic Four number 49.
This one's titled If This Be Doomsday. We have all the same team, so I'm not going to say their names again.
That's probably part of the reason these comics are starting to get so good, because they're not changing the team every issue or two, so they can...
I guess start working on something. I guess the letterer did change at some point. It went from the other guy, the Sam Rosen.
Nothing against the letterer, because good lettering is essential to enjoying a comic. But it's the least important role on the creative team, because the letterer just comes in and writes in what the other people have already written.
And at this point, it's like the two of them, and they're both pretty good at their jobs. So they're pretty interchangeable. Unfortunately,
Excellent letterers, and I appreciate their work, but they don't really have any creative input on the book.
Yeah, and they're pretty, like, you probably wouldn't really notice the difference, to be honest.
No. I've read bad lettering. I've read Dr. Fate stories, so.
This is a February 1966 release date, 20-page story, and Bill will take this one.
All right. Detailed summary, because of course. You're welcome, Dan.
Bastard.
Let's not bring my parentage into this. Accurate note, maybe.
Yeah, same here. What the hell?
With Galactus on Earth, the Watcher tries to appeal to the Planet Eater to leave Earth alone. When diplomacy doesn't work, Johnny and Thing try to attack Galactus to no effect. All one sentence, by the way.
Yes.
The Watcher tells them to return to their base and he will contact them shortly.
Complete with a non-capitalized the.
Yes. Meanwhile, the Silver Surfer slowly gains consciousness from the Thing's punch and falls through the skylight of Alicia Masters' apartment.
Again.
Sensing a wounded and lonely being, Alicia offers the Silver Surfer her sympathy and assistance. Galactus continues to assemble his planet-devouring device, and the Watcher explains to the Fantastic Four what will happen to the Earth if Galactus succeeds. The Watcher explains that there is a device aboard Galactus's ship that he will need the Human Torch to collect. Well, back... Okay, that's just wrong. It's not on Galactus's ship. Well, back at Alicia's apartment, Alicia learns of the Surfer's mission on Earth and appeals to him to turn against his master and help save the Earth. He is hesitant at first, but is starting to feel pity for the humans. When the Fantastic Four begin...
Only the ones who had to read this crap.
When the Fantastic Four begin attacking Galactus's almost complete device, the Planet Eater sends his robot Punisher, not that one,
okay,
to keep them out of his way while he repairs the device. With this distraction and delay, the Watcher uses the device to boost Johnny's powers to a degree that will allow him to travel to Galactus's ship. He's not going to Galactus's ship, he's going to Galactus's homeworld, and retrieve the weapon they need to defeat him. Finally, Alicia convinces the Surfer to help save the Earth, and to the surprise of the Watcher, sets off to confront Galactus. That
Who,
should be
Alicia
the surfer,
or the Surfer
setting off to confront Galactus.
I was gonna say,
not Alicia, but...
Wow, oh my god, this is poorly written.
The true hero, we need Alicia Masters.
Well, I didn't want to be the first to say. It wouldn't be any worse than Spider-Man.
I mean, they forget she's blind all the time, so... I mean, they talk about her being blind all the time, but then they also write her, like, walking through places she's never been before with no cane and no assistance and no problems.
Well, the comic couldn't be worse than Daredevil, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this was amazing.
This was already done.
Real...
Yeah, this is the shortest of them.
You got it easy.
I told you, mine aren't long.
I knew yours were short, but still. I love this one. This
I gave
is a five,
it a five
star again. I love this. This is the best one of the day.
Easily the best one of the day. Good pacing, good story beats. Everything made sense in the way it happened. An actually interesting cliffhanger.
Kill me.
I think Dan forgot
Kill
today
me.
Was the All Fantastic Four episode.
Kill me.
Just
that's Kill why you showed up for it.
Kill me. Kill me.
Well,
I can't do that, but I can offer you the startling saga of the Silver Surfer.
Oh, that should do it.
Yeah.
It'll be the silver nail in my coffin.
Issue number 50 of Fantastic Four. all the same team. March 1966 release date. 20-page story. Not great cover. And we're going to let Bill take this for this last comic of the day.
The covers for this whole run are horrible.
The last one was pretty decent.
They're Kirby covers. Unfortunately, Kirby covers are not great.
Yeah, he did a few good covers in his time, but boy, oh boy, these are bad.
The silver detailed summary. You're welcome, Dan.
Bastard.
The Silver Surfer arrives to try and stop his master from destroying the Earth. No matter how hard he tries, he is not able to stop Galactus. However, the confrontation does give Johnny the time he needs to return from Galactus's ship out in deep space. Galactus's homeworld, this is clearly still the person who wasn't paying attention, with the one weapon that can stop Galactus, the ultimate nullifier. When Reed threatens to use it against Galactus, he agrees to spare the Earth and leave if Reed gives him back the weapon.
The ultimate nullifier.
Yes, that's what it's called. Wow. It's a very important piece of Fantastic Four lore.
This is like a Mel Brooks movie.
True to his word, Galactus leaves, but not before first relieving the Silver Surfer of his herald duties and removing the Silver Surfer's space-time powers.
First, I gotta relieve myself. I'll be back.
I was watching Dan as he read the...
The Silver Surfer is thus exiled on the planet where he vowed to save, no longer able to roam the galaxies. After the battle, Alicia arrives to thank the Silver Surfer for his help, causing the jealous Thing to think she's choosing the Surfer over him. The Thing quietly walks away, feeling nothing but rejection. The Silver Surfer also departs, vowing to return once he's traversed all of the Earth. As life returns to normal, the press dismisses the Galactus fiasco as a hoax. While one man takes interest in the news reports of the Thing roaming the city, at Metro College, the unreliable football star Whitey Mullins gives Coach Thorne a tongue-lashing after being scolded for not being a team player. At the Baxter building, Sue storms out when Reed once again ignores her in favor of his experiments. Finally, Johnny arrives at his first day of college at Metro University. There he meets Wyatt Wingfoot and the two become fast friends, but as the two are meeting with the dean, Johnny can't help but think about Crystal, who is still trapped in the Hidden Land behind Maximus's negative zone barrier. And that's the end.
Like a low-budget WandaVision. You survived
all the Fantastic Four recaps, Dan.
Oh, God.
And we have a reward for you starting next week.
Well, don't get there too fast, because let us talk about our ratings on this one.
Let's do this. Get it over with.
I just want Dan to be in anticipation.
This lost a step compared to the last couple. Just a little
anticipation?
This lost several steps compared to the last one.
Hopefully somebody will come to relieve you. But
I can relieve myself, thank you very much.
That's good, because at your age, that's a challenge sometimes.
It can be.
This one lost a step on the last couple. I only gave this one a 4.
I only drink the blood of people who eat a lot of fiber.
Then I'm safe.
The main Galactus story gets wrapped up really fast to tell some other stuff and set up for the future.
They set a lot of stuff in motion here, though.
It turns into a bit of a... It's kind of an in-between issue in a way, apparently. So yeah. I don't know.
I only gave this one a 3.
They tease back to the Inhumans. Shocked.
It's a 3.
Yeah, but they set up the next Inhuman arc. They set up the first Negative Zone arc.
They set up Torch in college and Wyatt Wingfoot.
Yeah, Wyatt Wingfoot is important for a long time.
A mainstay in Fantastic Four continuity.
Yeah, he's actually not important for that long at first, but then they bring him back in later and he becomes a fairly major character.
Yeah, he becomes more important than he is at the start.
Yeah, because he tags along with them for like 10 issues, then they forget about him.
But yeah.
I have no words for the horrifying podcast that this has been. I want to apologize to everybody who's watching this. Okay, it's not my fault. They chose the titles that we had to go through. I'm sorry.
Actually, the read, whatever we followed, to be fair. No.
Yeah, whatever.
I just place them as they come.
That's what she said.
Speaking of, what do we have next week?
Oh, God.
Well, next week, golly gee, I'm glad you asked, Bill, because we have a banner of an episode next week. First half, much to Dan's delight, is all Fantastic Four. God damn it, that was this episode. It's all Amazing Spider-Man, as we get issues 31 through 33 in the next whole story arc of Amazing Spider-Man.
Love that arc.
It's a great arc. I'm sure Dan will be miserable. We've got Sergeant Fury in the Salvan Commandos number 26 after that.
Jesus
which
Christ.
Is...
Are we sure we can discuss this issue in public? I just saw what the title is.
It's a very interesting comic.
Dum-Dum does it the hard way.
Hey, at least you can't get pregnant that way. Anyway, Daredevil 12 and 13 will then end the day off, which I know does break off the last part of a story, but I didn't want to overload the episode. So
I'm fine with us sticking to two Daredevils.
And three Spider-Mans.
The Spider-Man arc is good.
The Sergeant Fury, I really enjoy it.
Fuck, if you stick me with Spider-Man, I'll sabotage this shit so hard.
No.
I think we know what you're
getting stuck with, pal.
Don't give me Fury. Don't do it.
Fine, we won't give you Spider-Man or Fury. You solve a problem for the rest of us.
Yeah, I'll take Daredevil. I'm good with that.
You can have the Plunderer.
That's what you were getting anyway, pal.
Jeez.
Spoiler alert, Daredevil goes to shit really fast.
See, this is where Daredevil becomes awful.
Well, after all the rest of this crap, it can't be any worse.
But it should be great to hear Dan read.
Mike Murdock has something to say about that. I don't think Mike shows up in these issues, but he has something to say about it. Can't get any worse.
He doesn't
show up
in these by it, were we?
No, I knew it was coming.
I'm not going there, sorry.
That's all right. We'll leave it to Dum Dum.
Yes. Can we bail out of this before it's too late?
Oh, well. If you're watching us on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, and even share if you would like to. We're also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you're on Spotify, please click the poll. Let us know what's your favorite, which of the comics we covered today was your favorite. Let us know why you love The Seeker. Anyways.
I was going to go with Whitey Mullins.
Well.
I was going to go with the real hero, Alicia.
But this is supposed to be stuff that sucks, and we're not Ben Grimm.
Oh, so you're saying Ben sucks?
I'm not explaining that joke to you, Dan.
Okay.
But you see, sometimes when a man and woman love each other...
Uh-huh.
Anyways.
Tell me. Don't leave me in suspense.
We will see you all in the next episode.
Have a good one, everyone.
Of Route 616, episode 75 coming up next. And peace out.